Blog Talk Radio.
And of course, this is the Sports Lounge, and that's a wrap in six. It's the title of this. I'm your man, the magician, and you know how we do. And of course, I got my man Lou, Big Lou, coming in the house. Lou Maddox signing in momentarily to get past the issues of the storm of what we call technical difficulty. So, here we go. Once again, another final season is done for the NBA, and now we have a period of silence where it's going to be nothing in between except for boring baseball. And I'm sorry to say, but let's just be realistic about what the situation is. Bad baseball, bad situation. We're not going to be entertained for a few months here until football comes into play. And, of course, basketball will be right back around the corner come October. So we can lead off first with this championship, and of course, I predicted this championship would go to seven games and ended up going six. At one point, the series was 2-1 in Cleveland's favor, and we saw LeBron pretty much making history. You know, I would say that he had the toughest task that anybody of his stature, being in his position, has ever had. You know, the ability to take a team to the finals, number one, and actually almost win it. You have two all-stars that were basically guided out or basically dropped out because of injuries. And he had to pretty much pick up that slack and deal with, you know, players that were good. I think it was a good thing because a couple of players got discovered in Tristan Thompson and, of course, Timothy Mozgov. Great. But, you know, next year coming in, as you know, Varejao is going to be ready. And, of course, I expect Kevin Love to honor what he said in the meeting when he was asked a specific question and as far as whether he was going to come back, Kevin Love. And then, of course, we know Kyrie Irving will be back in a few months. All of them will be ready for the start of next season. So this was somewhat of a serious situation. Now, of course, now the thing that was a big topic early on after the Game 6 was the fact that Iguodala had won the Finals MVP. And the question is, okay, how does he get it over Steph Curry, or even, because it was an 11-vote panel, and out of the 11 votes, seven of them went to Iguodala. The other four went to LeBron James. And what I found out is that in history, there was always a chance or a situation that, you know, LeBron or Jerry West, I believe, back in the early 60s, even though they lost the finals, won the MVP for the finals, being on the losing team. Now, I just assume throughout history that this was just the case, you know, that this situation always went to the winning team, regardless of what happened. You cannot give a losing team an MVP if they don't win. And that's really been the staple for most professional sports from what I've seen and what I've witnessed. I don't think I've ever witnessed, to my knowledge, it being anywhere outside of that or any backwards talk in terms of that kind of situation. I've always seen, okay, the winner of the finals or the winner of that team is the one that actually gets the opportunity to get that MVP. Now, the question for me is, okay, nevertheless, because you look at LeBron's stats and numbers throughout this finals, I think it was 38, 13, and 8, you know, something ridiculous like that. I would consider giving him the MVP in the finals this year. But you know what? You know, as fate have it, and as we would see throughout history, it typically goes to, you know, the guy that is on the winning team. And then I would have to say, well, what happened to Steph Curry? Why didn't he win it? Him and Iguodala had similar numbers, but let's be real about it. I understand the choice, and I can see why they would give it to Iguodala, because he was basically inserted into the starting lineup and produced pretty well and did a good job of playing defense against LeBron James the best you can, even though LeBron almost averaged a triple-double. Okay, 38 points, 13, 12 rebounds, 8 assists. He almost averaged a triple-double, but he did about his best or as good a job as you could do against him. You'd have to see that. So I would have to say that, you know, when you look at the way this is lined up or the way everything is balanced out, we would have to say that, you know, he made the most impact in the most tightest situation or the best tightest situation on the winning team. He would get it before I would give it to Steph Curry, but Steph Curry should have at least got one of them, one or two at least, right? He's the league MVP, and he did have something to do. He freed up a lot of space for Iguodala to do what he do because of what he does, okay? He pretty much goes to the outside, dribbles, hits a nice outside shot, makes it difficult to even cover him. I mean, when he was hot those last three games, man, he was somewhat on fire. It was unstoppable, unbelievable. And we'll bear witness to it. So we have to always keep that in mind and be close to the situation and have a lack of understanding for what's going on. Because if you try to, you know, disregard the fact of what he did, what he put up in those numbers in that minimum amount of time. And, you know, let's not forget, you know, to me, Iguodala was always a pretty solid player. He was pretty good coming into the game. And then, of course, over the time period when it was with Philadelphia, that was a losing squad. He never really got a chance to do what he did. So then he went to Denver, and I thought he was pretty solid over there too. You know, and went to Golden State, finally gets a break, and now he's the MVP. And because of his contribution and what he did, hey, you got to give him his props and say, okay, I can understand and see why we would give him the trophy. Because that would just make the most sense out of the two. But then if I had to actually give it based on performance, I would have given it to LeBron. But some people have to realize that it's almost like a secondary prize for him. It's not necessarily a something that works or is great in his favor because he has a situation where it would be a consolation prize. So it's like, okay, why should I take this? I have to be embarrassed. I lost another finals. And, you know, you got a couple of crowds of different people that are just going to come strong on LeBron and say, hey, man, you know, you're 2-4 in finals. And it's like, come on, man, two of those finals, you got to give him a pass on, to be quite honest with you. The one from last year, you can't somewhat give him a pass. You know, San Antonio was just a better team. The championship that they lost to Dallas when he was with Miami's first season, that one falls on his shoulders because he pretty much mailed that one in. He didn't give forth his best effort in that finals. And I say, okay, you hang that over his head. But let's not be oblivious and foolish to the fact that this guy is actually everything and more. Everything and more, especially when it comes to ability. And talent-wise, I'm going to say something that might cause a little bit of disruption or might cause people to get upset, but I feel this is the truth. When it comes to just physical abilities, physical talent, I feel he's probably the best player I've ever seen as far as physicality. The guy is 6'9". He weighs about, what, 270? He's straight muscle. He's fast. He's powerful. He can go inside. He can go outside. He's pretty strong and all across the board except for when it comes to clutch situations and throws. Those are his pet peeves, and those two particular areas are given to Jordan because in clutch situations, there's nobody more clutch than Michael Jordan. It's just there's nobody. How many game winners, how many situations has he just made the last shot or just made it so as to where, man, like, this guy's just unstoppable. Playoff games, at the free throw line, in clutch situations and clutch moments, he's automatic. That's one thing that, one flaw that I see in LeBron's game. It's like when it comes late to the game or late in the fourth quarter, he struggles. He has a hard time of hitting both his free throws, and that was somewhat of an issue. Now, he took a lot of flack in game 6 here, which I see. If you look at his numbers, he was like 30 points, and basically he didn't really do much after the third quarter. He pretty much sat on the bench because the game was a wrap at that particular point. And it's like, listen, man, the guy averages so many minutes. He needed help. He didn't have it. Golden State was just hot. They just kept making three-pointer after three-pointer. It's like, come on. Got to give him an opportunity. You know, we got to be fair on certain things in criticism when it comes to him, because he's basically the only reason why they was even competitive. I mean, he basically took 70% of their production by himself when you include all the rebounds and when you include the assists and when you include his points. That makes up about 70% of their points and might even be more of their offense in particular. And then all I hear is criticism about, well, he didn't shoot a high percentage. Well, who would? Who do you have the ball to give to? And I got to give him props. So, you know, he made Mozgov pretty good and look really good. And outside of Mozgov, Tristan Davis, he looks somewhat very impressive too. So we have to be fair when we make calls on certain situations and be true to ourselves. He played a wonderful, tight game, and it was evident because of him that they was even in the game or made an attempt to be strong or had a strong hold. So typically, that's what I noticed and that's what I saw going into that final game. So I was very impressed with what he was doing and how things were running. So what I did like about what I saw from a standpoint is the fact that you have condition when it comes to games. You know, if you do this, then this will happen. If you do that, then this will happen. You know, you have these different alternate endings. You know, if Shumpert makes his shot, Cleveland possibly goes up 3-0. Nobody comes back from 3-0, game over. That's a possibility. It could have happened, but it didn't happen. Okay, he missed. Golden State won in overtime. After that, Cleveland won the next two, and then, you know, how the rest goes. And one thing you got to give Golden State credit on is the fact that they went ahead and came back, and they basically was down 2-1 to Memphis, and here they turn around and won 3 straight games again. You know, they when the pressure was on them, they just pretty much answered the bell. They came, you know, they stood in the paint, and they just took the game over their style, their way, and made the adjustment. But just to go ahead and let you know, my man, Mr. Lou Maddox, just came in. Must have had some kind of technical difficulty. How's it going, sir? I was just getting it started and warmed up for you to touch.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, unlike Cleveland.
What just happened? Hello?
Hello?
Okay, it looks like, there you go. There you go. Experiencing some technical difficulties. It's storming out here in Central Florida, so we're going to have a situation where it's possibly going to be going in and out here. So just bear with us. Be patient. Lou, you still there?
Hello?
Okay, there you go. I hear you now. Can you hear me? All right. I got you warm. I got it warmed up for you there, sir. Warmed up for you. And I pretty much just been going on about, you know, the series and how it was wrapped up in six. What could have happened? What conditions could have happened? You have so many, you know, different reasons as to what could have happened, how things would have transpired. Then you get a lot of blame on LeBron, or really for what he did in the last game. And I'm like, listen, you know, for me, there's not much more you could ask from a superstar on what he did. I'm not going to put any kind of responsibility high on what he had to go through. He struggled, and it was tough. He put up almost averaging a triple-double. Come on, cut it loose. Let's be real about it. You know, the reality is if he doesn't take on what he takes on, it's not even close. Because even when he was in it, it wasn't close. And Cleveland had two missing all-stars. Those make a difference. So, Lou, I want to go ahead and get your input on that, because I know I've been rambling and talking for the past 15 minutes here. Give us some insight, sir. What did you see, and how did it go for you?
Well, I told you they wasn't going to win, didn't I?
Well, initially, yeah, before the injury, you basically, actually without Kevin Love's, with Kyrie Irving, you said Cleveland would win in six. Then Kyrie went down in game one in overtime, and it was like, well, you know, I'm going to still hold tight to the pick, but, you know, if certain things don't happen, then it'll go six for Golden State. And eventually that's what the turn ended up being. I figured that Cleveland would have won the game in Cleveland, and I picked, you know, Golden State in seven.
Yeah, Cleveland had to win their games at home. They had to. That's the only way they would have won this series. I picked them to win in six, so they had to steal one from Golden State in their building, which they did. And the next two games, they should have won at home. That's pretty much the only way I would have seen Cleveland win the series. They weren't going to win four in a row after the game two. That just wasn't going to happen. So, but the main reason why they put themselves in this position is tempo. Really, the game tempo is what turned everything upside down. They played into the hands of what Golden State was trying to do this whole series, really how Golden State was playing this whole playoffs. You know, Cleveland got this to this point because they played the way that was their strength. So, and it baffles me even why would you stop doing what works? There's one thing I can't stand with teams and players of anything. Like, you're doing something that works, then all of a sudden you want to stop doing it. Like, what you're doing is enough. No, it's not enough. You still got like three quarters left. You still got like 5 minutes left in the game. No, keep doing what works. Why would you stop doing that? It makes no sense.
You know, and, going into further detail about that, like when you say they need to go, they should have kept the strategy going the same way as to what they were doing. Tell me what you mean by that. What kind of strategy was Golden State, what Cleveland was using to stall Golden State and what ended up happening? Because I think it's a combination of Golden State making the adjustment, you know, sitting Bogut on the bench and putting in Iguodala, and that kind of really changed the whole tempo and the whole face of the game, to be quite honest. I think they didn't have an answer for him when they was playing double or they're trying to double up on Curry. But tell me from your standpoint, where did it go down and what does that mean?
It means they're playing great defense. Two things that they did wrong. Defensively, they just gave up on the perimeter. Defensively, they just gave up. And offensively, they're trying to play an up-tempo game when you don't have anybody on your team that, you know, that can, you know, reward and finish in that type of game. Now, you have a couple of players that can do that, but your whole team is not made up like that at its current state of what it is. And on top of that, when you have Golden State that plays like that, you know, from day one, and you have a player on your team that plays his best in that setting, which is Iguodala, you know, they would have won anyway, even if Iguodala didn't start, because, you know, Cleveland, I don't know why they even did that. I don't even know why they say, hey, we're Golden State now. No, you're not. So it doesn't make any sense why he would do that. So Iguodala, he still would have had a decent game, but him starting and them playing the way that they're playing, plus with Cleveland not playing good defense on the perimeter, that just it was over for them. It was pretty much over for them. I mean, even though Cleveland still did a decent job rebounding the ball, It doesn't make a difference because you have to get the ball. To score the ball, you have to get ball. That means you have to rebound and also you have to play decent defense. You play decent rebounding, but defensively, no one was there. Too many times I'm seeing when they're shooting outside shots, it's like, what is everybody doing? Why is everybody in the paint? And Golden State wasn't really that effective offensively in that game. You know, I think it was like game five or game four.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, game four, really. I think game four, wasn't effective.
Yeah, Curry was still, I mean, he's like 22 points, but he wasn't playing like, you know, how he's been playing this whole playoffs. Thompson wasn't playing, you know, all that well either. So it's like you had it right there, but you just gave it away. not doing the things that he's supposed to do. He didn't just, they just didn't play to their strengths.
Yeah. I can see that. And I think when they played defensively and physically during that time period, I think it was a situation of where if they would have kept, because look, it worked for the first three quarters, right? And I think once they got up a little bit, I think it was game three when they got up by close to like, what, maybe 4 or 5 points. And then they turned around and was trying, I think it was J.R. Smith, to be quite honest, started to try to hit threes. And it just wasn't falling, and it just let them get right back in the game. Steph turned it off. Really, in that game three in the fourth quarter is when he started to get hot in the fourth quarter. He was killing it. I think he scored 17 points in that quarter in game three. And in game four, five, and six, he basically sealed the deal. He was just making big play after big play, gave that team momentum, along with Iguodala. Now, let me tell you, Iguodala did show up, but let me tell you something. You know, his free throw shooting, he's got to do something about that. That was just, whoa. And I was also making a point, too, Lou, that's the only flaw. I see two flaws in LeBron's game, and that's really like last-second shot, right? Or as far as being clutch, he's 50% or 60% clutch guy. You know, you can depend on him that well. I think he's gotten better over the course of the past few seasons. He's been more clutch towards the end of the game, so I'll give him somewhat of a green light, but a hesitant yellow/green. But when it comes to free throw and clutch moments, he misses a lot of free throws and clutch moments. That's the only criticism I have for LeBron James. That's it. I don't really have any more else. You know, you're going to shoot high percentage shots because nobody else can shoot for you. So you have to take tough shots and you have to create shots. Your shooting percentage is not going to be good. Plus, Iguodala's playing great defense. I can't nullify that. He played him tight. He played him tough. And Iguodala really basically proved, if you remember before Jimmy Butler really signed earlier this season, I said we should have got this guy, like last year. Like, we should have got Iguodala. He was on the market. Philadelphia didn't want to resign him. Actually, was it Denver? Denver didn't want to resign him. And he was a free agent. I was like, man, that guy would be perfect, you know, to go along in place of Derrick Rose, who didn't want to play. And it didn't pan out. I guess they didn't see it, the vision. They saw him as a sixth guy coming off the bench type of guy. And, yeah, well, he's finals MVP now.
Yeah.
Before Rose, right? So, it's funny how people, yeah, you got to say that, right? But I suspect Jimmy Butler will be a whole lot better next season. It'll be some free agents. I don't know who you going to get to come to Chicago. They ain't got a coach. I got some guy from Iowa who, but anyway, back to the real story, something that makes sense, is that, you know, this was a series that I felt was good. It was tight, competitive. I would have liked to see it have gone to a game seven, but of course it didn't make it. So I'm not upset about it. I understand it, and I get it. So, you know, it's obviously what it is. Oh.
Yeah, it is what it is. You know, that was Cleveland's demise, and also on top of that, as I've been saying before the playoffs even started with this team, it's like, you have other players that you brought on this team for a specific reason, and you don't play these players.
Sean Marion, right? Yeah. And I don't get why he did not get any kind. And see, you know what? That's going to lead us into our next story, because of course, the day after the final, we're going to hear a lot of feedback that sounds pretty negative, such as David Black and LeBron's relationship and what is their relationship together. And this is the thing, you know, I understand rookie coach coming out of Israel, and rookie in the sense that he's never coached in the NBA, but of course he was a prospect. He was going to be on that Golden State staff. Steve Kerr hired him to be on his staff. So it's not as if that he was not going to get an opportunity or he doesn't understand basketball. I think he does. But I think where he kind of failed out is in the communication. And he was set up for failure. Listen, you're coming into a situation where the superstar runs the whole team. And it's because the owner made it that way, right? Once he left, he alienated LeBron so much that to get him back, he's like, you better treat me like royalty or I'll dip. And you'll have another dumpster fire. And there's no championships in Cleveland. It's not like anywhere else. I mean, it's been, almost 40 to 60 years, I think. So it's like they're going to go ahead and cater to this guy. And it's like to put a new guy or a new coach in that kind of situation where he doesn't have much of a say, but he kind of has to deal with the personality, I think that's the case. That's the situation. And his other downfall is just like you said, Lou, you just stated, hey, you brought guys from other teams. You brought them in to contribute. Why Sean Marion did not get an opportunity to play, I don't understand. I don't get it, Lou. And it's the something that was going on there. Maybe, you know, possibly the only thing I can come up with is maybe it has something to do with attitude. That's all I can figure, because why wouldn't you play him, right? I don't get it.
Yeah, that could be a possibility, but at the same time, this is, you know, when have we ever seen Sean Marion have a bad attitude about anybody as far as like players or coaches?
Never heard anything.
You
look at Sean Marion's career stats. His career stats, he averages 15.2 points a game. His lowest output was just this year playing with Cleveland, 4.8. So it's like, you know, his past couple of years, even when Dallas, it was 10, 12, 10. So he could have gave you a good solid 10 points, right? And then he could also gave you maybe two assists. And even in the rebound section, he'll give you at least 6 or 7. So he didn't even explore that option. I think that was a big mistake.
And let's not also forget about the fact that in game, I think it was game 5, where he barely played Mozgov at all in that game.
And I don't understand that. After Mozgov had like 28 points? Something ridiculous. It's like, man, I don't know, man. I don't quite understand the logic in that at all. I don't understand that logic. And it produced bad situation. Terrible situation. So, you know, at least it's all like he doesn't know what he's doing.
I guarantee you Sean Marion did a hell of a lot better than what J.R. Smith was doing.
I believe that with all my – he's the guy that really people should be, you know, saying something about. He just didn't show up at all. He didn't show up at all. Not one bit did he show up. He basically laid down in that series, 100% laid down in that series. He didn't do anything, and – it's like, you know, why is it, you know, he didn't get the chance, you know, sit on the bench a little more? I don't understand that. I don't quite get it. And I think, you know, he dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah,
it was game
kinda
5, right, Mozgov?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's kind of ironic in this situation because I was when they first did the trade with Smith and Iman Shumpert, I was like, okay, Iman Shumpert makes a lot of sense. But I was like, why would they want J.R. Smith? Because, you know, right now off the bat, after everything that was going on in New York, it was like, who would actually want to have J.R. Smith? And the only reason you would actually want to have this guy on your team if you just want someone just out there to shoot the ball, you know, in like whatever dire situation you're in, if you want to get some buckets up, okay, we'll bring you in to do that. That's basically what he was on the team there to do. And he didn't even do that. The one thing that he only wants to do is shoot the ball. And he didn't even do that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, he basically did not have a good series. This is the thing. When he was playing against Atlanta, he was the man, right? I could totally understand coming into the season or into the series why you would start him. But remember, if you recall, and you remember, we had a big discussion, and I said that guy doesn't look like he's ready. Remember, he had his hoodie close up in his face, shooting the basketball. Then he was around the whole facility or during the background, riding on that little ride-on, you know, toy thing, one of those, like the mall cup has without the hands. It's like,
yeah,
he didn't come for business. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't have the right mentality to me. And that, to me, displayed, you know, in the game. He didn't bring a certain mentality. You know, hey, Lou, this is the finals, right? This is like it. This is the championship. This is the largest and the biggest stage of one's NBA career. So you want to make sure you come for business, right? You're going to practice. You're not going to be a distraction. You're not even going to have allow somebody to have a criticism about what you're doing. And I just didn't think he brought the right attitude. And it bared out in the series. He basically was non-existent. But just like you say, Timothy Mozgov basically scored 28 points in game 4. In game 5, he only played 9 minutes. What was that? Took one shot at him. I don't understand that. I don't get it. And, you know, Sean Marion not having the ability to play. Even Joe Harris not getting a chance to play. Kendrick Perkins, he gives you an inside presence, but when everybody from the outside is killing you, it doesn't make much of a difference, right? So,
yep. Perkins played. You gave Perkins, you know, play time in a series that they were going to win anyway against Boston. You gave them play time then, and in a series that really matters, that where you're going to need big bodies for, you don't play them then. Like, what's the point of bringing these players in if you're not going to use them? I just don't get it.
I got to agree with you, especially in money time. You got to at least make some kind of attempt. And let me tell you something. Steve Kerr, we got to say this, man. Listen, that guy, he's a pretty good coach. He's a pretty solid coach. Solid coach. And he made the toughest decision, which really wasn't tough when you really think about it. He pretty much sat Bogut on the bench. He should have did that from the beginning of the season. That guy right there. That guy's... And, you know, he's such a, you know, at first I was against David Lee. I was trying to wonder what happened to David Lee in the playoffs. And he just, I don't know what happened, but it ended up being the right decision. He inserted Iguodala into the starting lineup. And then, of course, Sean Livingston was a great addition. I liked the kind of energy he brought. And then who was that center that they had that was pretty solid, man? What's that dude's name? Was it Azalea or something? Or I forgot the guy's name. I think it was Azalea.
Yeah,
he's like an African dude.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was a good choice to bring in, too. And you know what? Next season, I know who I'm getting rid of. I know Bogut's gone. I'm getting rid of him. If I can dump his contract, I'm done with him. He's useless. All he's going to be noted for in this whole series is busting the back of LeBron James' head, pushing him into the crowd and acting like he didn't do it. You know? Like, come on, man. Terrible.
Yeah. I don't know. The whole Cleveland thing, none of that even makes any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And at this point, I honestly don't expect to see J.R. Smith in the league any longer. Maybe even one more season. After that, I think everybody's going to wipe their hands with this guy, and that's it.
You know what? If he stays, I think he's going to stay because I think LeBron likes him. I think he's going to stay because of that. And right now, let's be real about it, Lou. LeBron is basically the GM of the team, and he should be. I mean, he leaves you, and when he leaves in 2008, they went to the finals, then the next year they lost, and then that's when he left. And basically, you know, rumors have surrounded that it was really issues, not just off this, it wasn't just basketball-related issues, but it was like teammates. Like, I think it was Delonte West and his mom had some kind of situation. I thought that was like a rumor. I thought it was made up, but it was actually true. The part of it is that management didn't do anything about it. They didn't intervene. They didn't, you know what I mean? Like, that's embarrassing. Yep. It really is. That's tough. And that's got to be, you know, super. And I find out that's really kind of what opened up the whole falling out situation between that whole team, between him, Mo Williams. Who was that at that specific time? Was him, Mo Williams,
Delonte
West, Igalis, right?
Igalskis.
And that squad and that team was close. Remember, they used to be tight, taking team pictures together, and they just could not deliver, and they didn't have the right chemistry. This year, I think they struggled with chemistry early, but then as the season went on, they was doing it. And those are just two big losses. I mean, you can't expect to lose Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving and be successful against a Golden State team that can just shoot the lights out. I mean, is that fair? I mean, if they have them two, Lou, I think it goes your favor. I think it goes six games Cleveland, obviously. I mean, it wasn't even close because what you got for Dellavedova was pretty good. He'd have that situation coming off of the bench, right? Iman Shumpert coming off the bench, J.R. Smith coming off the bench. Okay, and you discover Tristan Thompson and what he's doing, and, of course, Timothy Mozgov and what he's doing. Those two big men showed up. They got two really good big men. To be quite honest with you, they're pretty solid. Yeah. You know, I don't know James Jones' answer. I think they got to do something with him. Mike Miller is basically on crutches. He was great. Now he can't move. I watch him, and it's like, you know, somebody needs to give him a cane because he can barely move around. You know, that's primarily what I see anyway. So.
Well, the offseason is going to be interesting for them in the offseason because all of these acquisitions that they've made during this season, it's like, okay, now that everybody comes back, who are you going to keep on the team? When Kevin Love comes back 100%, when Kyrie Irving comes back 100%, when Varejao comes back 100%, it's like, how are you going to roll this roster now?
You know, I say you keep all of the great people and all of the suspect people, get rid of them. I mean, you can keep Love. You know they're gonna negotiate something, and then of course you know the CBA basically, you know, bargained a pretty good deal for the upcoming. I think what the salary cap's gonna be like 130 some or 140 some, enough to where they should be able to handle some of these players. And yeah, you gotta keep Varejao. But then again, you look at Varejao. I look at Mozgov and I look at Tristan Thompson, man. You know, would Varejao give you that much better than what they did? I don't think so. I'm being real, right? I mean, what do you think? I mean, I like what I'm talking about Mozgov.
Not better than Mozgov, but he is high energy like Thompson, but not at the level of Thompson is, but he is more versatile as far as like passing, you know, down in the blocks. So as far as that goes, he's very valuable for them there. But even still, all these new acquisitions.
Shooting.
Well, not shooting.
Yeah, you're right.
I'd say not shooting, but more offensively aware than Tristan Thompson is.
I always compare him to my man out of Chicago. That's what I was really kind of like saying he's a better shooting Noah. You know, because Joakim Noah, he doesn't really care about offense. But he plays excellent hustle, and I think Varejao is kind of the same way when it comes to hustle. Not as intense, but then on the other hand, he's better offensively. He has a better touch, and you know he plays and passes the ball better than what Joakim Noah does. But I tell you, I mean this thing is a serious movement, and yeah, like the off season, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of movement with a lot of teams. Right, we're going to be interested to see what's going on with Kevin Durant. Is he going to stay? Is he going to give that extension? Is he going to stay with or to Westbrook, or is he going to be on his way out the door? We know Chicago's pretty much done. They have no coach, and they got stupid management. You look at the Lakers. LeBron, of course, you know, he's not going to sign his deal. He's going to, you know, hold out for the max. He's not going anywhere, but he's also going to watch what they're going to do. David Blatt, is he in or out, bro? What do you say? Is he here to stay or gone tomorrow?
I think he's here to stay. I think one more season. That's what I think. He's not going nowhere. Regardless of everybody is saying out there, I think he's going to be in for another year.
I think so, too. I mean, it's his first rookie season. I think, man, I don't really see LeBron really wanting to have another kind of relationship with anybody else at this particular moment. Could be wrong, but I'm guessing, like, he probably feels he might have more freedom on, you know, dealing with Blatt, you know, has more freedom to kind of voice his opinion and also, you know, get some kind of, you know, I think he has more play. If he has another coach in there, the other coach's personality is going to be, you know, pretty stern. And sometimes maybe the great players like to be challenged, but oftentimes I see with great players, a player's coach is what everybody likes. So, and we know the NBA is all about the superstars, and everybody's going to go to directing the superstar. So if LeBron signs off on it, that's where he's going to be. And if he doesn't, I mean, you really can't blame him because some of the coaching moves and some of the situations dealing with that is not so great. So,
yeah. Well,
we'll see how that goes.
Speaking of off-season moves, we already had one that happened during this series.
Yeah, with the Clippers, right? And Stevenson?
Yeah, it was Lance Stevenson.
Lance Stevenson. I get the White and Lance Stevenson mixed up. From
Lance Stevenson going to the Clippers.
It.
Yeah, Jordan said enough was enough.
Yeah. I think that was a good move. I think he's going to be, man, if you had to pick who was going to win it based on today, I would have to definitely say right about now, I really like the Clippers. I just do. I think what they're going to do in the offseason or what they're going to beef up, and I have a feeling they're going to sign DeAndre Jordan. They got to. I mean, who else going to pick him up for that money? He's not going to get, you know, super mega dollars anywhere else. He can't hit free throws. I mean, if he did, I think they'd be willing to pay him the money. But he doesn't, so... they might lose one of those veterans, whether it be his son, whether it be J.J. Redick. It's going to be one of those two. And it's probably be Redick more than anything else. But, you know, you got Lance Stevens probably going to have some more physicality there. It's probably going to be Jamal Crawford out of there, right? I think he...
Yeah, I don't think that would be a smart thing to do. You don't want to get rid of that.
That means his son... It's probably going to be his son. Although his son did show up in the playoffs, so we'll see. I don't see them
really
letting go of J.J. Redick.
They're not going to let go of Redick, and I don't understand why they would even make that deal for Lance Stevenson. Lance Stevenson, him too, I don't see him less in the league anymore either.
Him and J.R. Smith, right? Suffer from the same kind of mentality of just doing stupid things. But, you know, I think with him, with the kind of coach that is there, see, Doc Rivers, certain coaches carry a certain kind of clout. And it's like you're not finna just do what you want with certain coaches because they have the support. They have the cachet. You know, Phil Jackson, he has the cachet. Pat Riley, cachet, right? This is, you know, Doc Rivers. He has the cachet. He's one of the few coaches in the league that doesn't really have to tolerate ignorance. He can get rid of you and be justified in doing so. So I see that being a situation. Proven winner, proven person to get to the finals a few times over. So I see that. But that's a pretty big move. Right now, if I had to pick a finals, I would definitely say that I think the Clippers, it would be the Clippers in Cleveland next season. That's where my gut tells me that. San Antonio, depending on if Aldridge goes there, I hear what he's thinking about doing. If he goes there, man, you can. I'm taking San Antonio.
That's all we're really waiting on is where LaMarcus is going to go.
Yeah, I think they're talking heavy, big time San Antonio with it. And boy, you know, I mean, Portland will go back down and that'll go ahead and bring in, you know, Oklahoma City. And boy, that's primarily what I see from that. I mean, who you got so far? So my finals is Clippers and Cleveland. Who do you got? And we have the right to reserve the change. I mean, we don't got to keep it.
Yeah. Probably from everything that I live right now, I would say Cleveland would go back again, being with the personnel that they have. Even if they get rid of a couple of people, they still got, you know, a good depth on their team now, so with everybody back. So as far as the East goes, I say Cleveland will be back, you know, at this point. In the West, it's kind of up in the air. And really, it's more up in the air, mainly based off of the rinky-dink setup that they have for seeding in the playoffs. So that's really what put everything out of whack. Yeah, so I really don't know right now. I mean, I would go back saying possibly San Antonio again, but even without LaMarcus there, if he does go there, then yeah, Golden State is not going back. They're not going back. They're not going to make it past San Antonio with LaMarcus there.
Yeah, I don't see nobody. I picked him to win the whole thing if he comes there. I don't think, this thing is matchups. If San Antonio gets by the Clippers, I think they beat Golden State. Be quite a matchup wise. San Antonio's just one of those teams, man. They're just a headache for everybody. It's just that's what it pop does. So that's primarily what I see. So that's what you got. So you got San Antonio and Cleveland. If LaMarcus goes there, what if LaMarcus doesn't go there?
If LaMarcus doesn't go there, it matters on where you're at. If he stays, and I doubt he stays in Portland, I still don't see much happening with Portland. I see them, they're still going to be a solid playoff team even with him, but they're still missing a couple of things, and I don't know if they're even going to get that in the draft this year, because this draft is more about, you know, where the free agents that are going to go more than what is coming out of college. So just based off of that, if he stays in Portland, then I would say Golden State is still be out of Golden State and San Antonio. Now, if he goes to San Antonio, then I would say San Antonio. I would even say Dallas if he decides to go to Dallas.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Dirk is on his way out the door.
LaMarcus, he could do all the down low dirty work. All Dirk has to do is shoot the ball now. Dirk is shooting the ball and, you know, playing down low too, being that he's 7 foot. If all he has to do is shoot the ball now, that's just as deadly.
You know what? If he does go there, that's going to be a problem. You're right. Anywhere Aldridge goes, it's going to be a serious problem. I mean, you put him on any one of those playoff teams, and that team legitimately could be a serious contender. So yeah, I guess a lot plays into where he's heading. And from what I hear, it seems like San Antonio, which would be just wow. But, so what is it? Is it San Antonio?
Yeah, I would still go to San Antonio out of the West.
Okay, I got the same. I got out of the West, I got the Clippers. I think the Clippers are going to do it next year. I think it's time. I think Chris Paul was there. Blake really impressed me in the playoffs as well. He kind of shrunk a little bit in the fourth quarter, but he overall came up really good this year than what he's done in previous years. So that's what I got. I got the Clippers and Cleveland. You got San Antonio, Cleveland. So I want to go ahead and get a touch-up in the NFL, get some things going on. Of course, you know, you got the whole Deflategate thing going on. I think notes or actual reaction taken are taken this Tuesday in terms of Tom Brady, what he's going to do. So we're going to kind of sit back and watch that. I heard in practice for the Patriots as well that Belichick got upset with the offense and even made the coaches run laps. Man, I mean, boy, all you can say is that you know you the man when you could do that. You just know you there's no joke about who you are and status wise when you can get your coaches, all his offensive coaches, to run laps as well. That's so serious. Man. Of course you got Dez Bryant out there in Dallas basically responded to a tweet and, you know, speaking basically on, hey, you know, am I wrong for looking out for my future, $13 million for a season, but I need a long-term solution. I agree with him from a standpoint that, you know, the NFL doesn't do guaranteed contracts, and I think they use players more than any other league, and they just better, at least the other league, have guaranteed contracts. The NFL does not. It's basically, you know, you just sitting there waiting to get chipped away, and doesn't seem fun, doesn't seem right, though, right? So it's hard for me to even make an argument for what's going on over there. But what I can say, though, Lou, is that on the other hand, you understand what it is. Don't be fooled.
Yep.
And, yeah, he's been quiet for the past 5 years, but listen, you got a rap sheet, my man. And, you know, there's a lot of people turning the other cheeks when you was getting in situations, so you should not be surprised. It is a business between him, between Adrian Peterson, and a lot of these guys. I think, you know, Dez is talking about not even playing in game one. Hey, listen, you know, do what you do, but understand that, you know, there's going to be a repercussion behind that. So you better play it safe and not be a fool in this situation. So we'll see how that plays out because we're not necessarily sure how that's going to look. But, you know, primarily the Cowboys don't need any more controversy. They done lost, you know, your boy over there to the Philadelphia Eagles, DeMarco Murray. And it's like I think they should have definitely tried to figure out some way to keep him. They just gave him to the enemy. And he's pretty solid. You know, don't let it, you know, people sit dead and them Cowboys, that's the only thing. They get arrogant and just thinking that, you know, hey, we can just put anybody back in our backfield. You know, they just got old boy from Arkansas that had been running back for a while, that had injury problems, played for the Raiders. And they got the guy that stole underwear, right? Oh, my goodness. Come on, man. What are you doing? This is not funny, right? But then it is funny. So, you know, people, you know, they turn around and they do, you know, ridiculous situations, man. And I don't understand, quite get it as to why they do that. But, you know, it's gonna play itself out. Derek McFadden and Lance and John Randall. Of course, they got Lance Dunbar. Listen, I don't see that happening. And you got Dez Bryant talking about he's not gonna play in week one. Man, they're gonna be in trouble. The Cowboys, but then again, it is the Cowboys, right? It's no surprise. It's no real big thing when it comes to them. They always find a way, a problem. So,
yeah.
We'll see what Pittsburgh does. I think, you know, the Steelers, man, are going to have a pretty tough team. You know, you got Big Ben. You forget Ben has two championships. He has two of them. Been to the Super Bowl 3 times, and of course, now he has Antonio Brown. And you do have Le'Veon Bell coming back in the backfield off injury, and he was a big problem. They could have easily made some noise had he not been injured. So we see that. Of course, the Ravens. And, you know, basically right now it's just a voluntary workout. And we're getting closer. Lewis, we got to scrap for topics now. Like, we're going to have scrap for topics because this is the worst part of the year if you're a sports fan, as right now. You got no football. You got no basketball for the next 2 to 3 months. We're sitting here in, what, the middle of June? And we're not going to say anything until, like, what, the end of August?
Yeah,
you're
still going to have some things going on, especially the NBA. Like, at the end of this month, we have the draft coming up. And after the draft, we're going to see you know, all the moves that's going to be made, and everything that happens at draft won't be finalized until like during July. And so once that starts, that's when we're really going to start seeing more things happen. Plus, you have the summer league, so a lot more stuff can show up during the summer league as well. And we have some interesting things that's going on in baseball as well.
Oh, man.
It's a real funny business.
With the St. Louis Cardinals, right, that's what you're referring to, and the whole issue of them having access to another team's personal situations, but it's like they need something, because that to watch that is like killing yourself. But, you know, in terms of what we see now, you know, it's going to be good. And it's a lot of things, a lot of stories that are going to be going in between. So we're going to keep our eyes peeled. We'll have great topics for them. Lou, as always, man, you hold it down. Pneumatic, and of course, I'm your host, Marlon Ranger. This is Sports Lounge, the Wrap in Six. It is official. It's done. Golden State Warriors champions. Enjoy it for about a good 5-6 months, and it'll be over. Okay? Peace.